Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
To return with her daughters-in-law from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had considered God's people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she had been living, she and her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to go back to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find security, each of you, in the house of your husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud. They said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Do I still have sons in my womb that may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go far away, for I am too old to have a husband. Even if I thought there was hope for me, even if I should have a husband tonight and bear sons, would you then wait until they were grown? Would you then refrain from marrying? No, my daughters. It has been far more bitter for me than for you, because the hand of the Lord has turned against me." Then they wept aloud again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. So she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not press me to leave you or to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There will I be buried. May the Lord do thus and so to me and more as well, if even death parts me from you." When Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Call me no longer Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has dealt harshly with me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" So Naomi returned together with Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, who came back with her from the country of Moab. They came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest.
Tell me that it's part of the plan. Why am I sinking like quicksand? You tell me that it's part of the jam. Why is no one dancing with the band? Follow me, I am on your side. But we don't have much time. Mama said there's a war outside. Only the strong survive.
Follow me, I'm on your side.
On your side. We don't have much time.
But we don't have much time.
There's a war outside. Only the strong survive. Strong survive.
Let me begin by expressing my deep thanks and appreciation to your pastors, Matt Smith and Linda, who is enjoying herself somewhere else. I'm grateful for this wonderful opportunity to come and witness the ministry that has been going on here for many years, especially under the leadership of your two pastors. And I have been admiring what they have been doing for a long time. So thank you. Thank you, Matt. I'm grateful also this morning to see a dear friend and colleague worshiping with us, Pastor Linda. So thank you. I come from a family lineage of immigrants. My grandparents emigrated to Malaysia around 1930 because of insecurity, lack of food, and lack of business opportunity during the beginning of the Great Depression and the outbreak of the Chinese Civil War. They were attracted by the prospect of work in what was then British Malaya. Hence, I grew up as a third generation Chinese Malaysian. I'm an immigrant. After 3.5 years of pastoral ministry in Malaysia, I decided to pursue graduate theological studies. And so in January 1984, my wife, who is here with me this morning, my wife and I, with our 18-month-old daughter in tow, landed in Dallas, Texas, with our 6 suitcases. After 2.5 years of study at Perkins School of Theology, I proceeded to Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, to pursue my PhD degree in Old Testament studies. Always prepared to go back to Malaysia to serve the church, particularly in theological education, I found that doors were closed on me. Without a viable option to return home, I was fortunate to land a teaching position at Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley. Maybe it was God who opened that single door for me. Having lived in the United States for the last 35 years, I have come to embrace my immigrant identity as a first-generation Asian American. As an immigrant, the story of Ruth fascinates me. Seeing Ruth through an immigrant eye has enabled me to arrive at a different appreciation for the story. Let me retell the story for you, one that is very familiar to many of us. It tells the story of an immigrant family, the family of Naomi and her husband Elimelech, who had to leave Judah because of a famine. Since times were better in Moab, they migrated over there. In Moab, the family settled. Soon the two sons married Moabite wives but were childless. Migrating from Judah to Moab, they moved from a situation of emptiness to a situation of fullness. Very quickly, the text tells us that the fullness did not last long. The husband soon died, and the two sons died not long after. Naomi was left alone in this situation with her two daughters-in-law, confronting yet again a situation of emptiness. Naomi decides to return to her land of origin. She tells her daughters-in-law that they would have better chances if they were to go back to their own families rather than to migrate with her to Judah, a land that is foreign and unknown to them. As a result, Orpah, one of the daughters-in-law, remain in Moab. But Ruth insists that she would migrate with her mother-in-law. No amount of coaxing from the part of Naomi could get Ruth to change her mind. So the two women go back to Judah. It is there in Judah that Naomi, in an attempt to look out for the welfare of Ruth, advises her to go to the fields of a relative by the name of Boaz in order to take advantage of an Israelite legal tradition that allowed foreigners, widows, and the poor to gather grain during the harvest. In that context, Ruth encounters Boaz, who almost immediately took a liking to her. He instructs his servants not to bother her. When Ruth tells Naomi of her encounter with Boaz, she instructs her to set him up for a sexual rendezvous. Naomi tells her to put on her best clothes. And when Boaz is totally merry and drunk with wine, to have sex with Boaz. When Boaz awakens and realizes what he has done, he recognizes that he does not have the immediate right of redemption on Naomi's land and hence could not marry Ruth. This right belongs to another closer relative. With some twists and turns to the story, the closer relative declines his right to redemption. As a result, the path is cleared for Boaz to exert his right to redemption of Naomi's land and marry the immigrant Ruth. The story ends with a note of fullness when Ruth and Boaz have a son who becomes the grandfather of King David. Asian Americans live in the midst of multiple worlds. The homeland of our ancestors in one of the Asian countries and our present world in the United States. It is on the basis of our living in and negotiating within these two disparate worlds that our cultural identity is constructed and reconstructed. As Asian Americans, we know all too well the pain of our cultural identity. Our identity is hyphenated and hybrid, each aspect contributing significantly to the construction of who we are. We are both Asians and Americans, yet never fully Asians nor Americans. Living a hybrid existence often gives us a sense of being a perpetual foreigner. As Asian Americans, our skin color, and for some of us, our accents, often led others, particularly white Americans, to ask us the question, where are you from? If we say, for example, that we are from Berkeley, Oakland, Sacramento, etc., this question will quickly be followed by another question. Really, where are you from? With the implication of, where is your homeland? Such questions, primarily from the dominant white society, in many ways define the Asian American experience. We are viewed as and related to as an other and cannot be real Americans. Over the course of Asian American history, we have been stereotyped as perpetual foreigners, yellow peril, social pollutants, and drug-using deviants, among others. In an attempt to demonize the Asian American population, the American society has constructed us in such a way that my U.S.-born younger daughter learn unconsciously at a very young age to refer to herself as Asian while referring to her white best friend as American. Hence, we live lives of perpetual foreigners. We continue to have to deal with the existential reality of being an other. The story of the Book of Ruth inscribes her as a perpetual foreigner, marrying an Israelite, vowing to her mother-in-law with the following words, where you go, I will go, where you lodge, I will lodge, your people shall be my people, your God, my God. marrying Boaz and becoming the ancestor of King David, do not make her an Israelite. Her status as a foreigner and a Moabite is emphasized repeatedly. The text even has Ruth say and claim, I'm a foreigner. Anoki nokri, in chapter 2, verse 10, reinforcing her status as a perpetual foreigner and other. While her name is mentioned 12 times in the book, 5 of the 12 times she is mentioned as Ruth the Moabite, even almost to the end of the chapter. There is a sense that the Israelite writer goes to great lengths to insist on her foreigner identity, her otherness, and resist to grant her any status as an Israelite. As a foreigner, Ruth probably felt that she was constantly straddling between two worlds, Moab and Israel, never belonging fully to either, but always an other. The use of othering is oftentimes an attempt to create an in-group versus an out-group. It is meant to create a us against them mentality and social structure. In an essay entitled The Use of Othering in the Formation of a Nationalist Society, John Evans notes that, quote, othering is a process that begins in institutions of power and filters down to the people. Indeed, it is a corporate xenophobia imposed upon the people of the nation through political rhetoric, the media, national historiography, and perpetuated through socialization. The process of othering serves two purposes. First, it serves to construct the self-identity of the nation. And second, it provides a scapegoat to the nation for its present and past troubles. End of quote. Many of us are aware that the rhetoric of othering has become even more pronounced. Anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, anti-women, anti-LGBTQIA rhetoric is all a part of the rhetoric of othering and is meant to create an us against them social fabric. These others are blamed for all the social ills. They must be rid of or contained in the attempt to make America great again. President Trump's recent attack on the 4 congresswomen and telling them in a tweet to go back to the places they came from resonates with a lot of people of color. Go home are words that have a familiar and painful ring. On November 4th, an American citizen of Hispanic descent in Milwaukee by the name of Mahmoud Vielas suffered second-degree burns on his face and neck when a 61-year-old white man threw acid on him and told him to go back to your country. Also on November 4th, there was a special investigative article in Huffington Post entitled, Go Back to Your Country, They Said. Let me read this paragraph. Throughout American history, expressions of hate have become punctuated with variations of the same sentiment. Go back to your country. Go back to Africa. Go back to China. Go back to Mexico. Is a foundational white nationalist insult meant to threaten a victim into believing that they don't belong and that this is a country for white people. What makes the insult unique now is that it is employed not only on the street, on the corner street, but on the presidential podium, giving it a new license. Constructed as perpetual foreigners, Asian Americans like myself are reminded over and over again that the United States can never be our home, and the insinuation that we should go home. Likewise, by reminding Ruth of her status and identity as a Moabite, is the writer subtly reminding her of where her home actually is? On September 24th this year, a first ever congressional hearing was held on President Trump's Muslim ban. At the hearing, Farhana Khera noted that Trump's Muslim ban is part of a long, shameful history of government oppression of disadvantaged people. This is what she said. The Muslim ban is the result of a campaign to demonize and dehumanize Muslims, evoking dark chapters from our nation's history. The story of immigrant Jews, Irish, Italians, the stain of Japanese internment camps. Each of these groups was shunned and isolated for their otherness. But America prevailed when these groups stopped being seen as others, outsiders, and started being seen as neighbors. End of quote. The rhetoric of othering and words like go home are attempts to distinguish and separate groups of people from one another by race, ethnicity, culture, gender, sexuality, economic status, and national origins. Difference is magnified for the advantage of the dominant group. The same way that ancient Israelites struggled in creating its own national identity by othering the Moabites and others, so too have some of our politicians engaged in othering groups of people in order to construct a more monolithic identity for the dominant group. Othering can have dire consequences and can end up in violence against people who are considered as others. In the aftermath of Charlottesville, former Vice President Joe Biden wrote a response in The Atlantic saying, "If it wasn't clear before, it's clear now. We are living through a battle for the soul of this nation." He continues, "This is a moment for this nation to declare what the president can't with any clarity, consistency, or conviction. There is no place for these hate groups in America. Hatred of blacks, Jews, immigrants, all who are seen as the other, won't be accepted or tolerated or given safe harbor anywhere in this country." End of quote. Ruth's story is a story of an immigrant, a story that I, as an immigrant, relates to. It's a story that is far too familiar for immigrants of color. It is a story of the immigrant other, the Moabite other, the Asian American other, the Hispanic other. In the current atmosphere where anti-immigrant rhetoric has become more and more pronounced, we find ourselves living in a world that is more isolated and fragmented and permeated with the earth against them mentality and social structure. The constant reminder that we do not really belong and that we should go home defines the existential reality of immigrant others. But in a nation of immigrants, the United States, unfortunately, has continued to be divided along color lines. Skin color marks the immigrant other. White immigrants seldom have to suffer the insidiousness of being othered. In our racialized society, where skin color still makes many people perpetual foreigners, the church needs to acknowledge the pain of such an identity of immigrant others. The church needs to go beyond its rhetoric to recognize, embrace, and affirm all persons, regardless of country of origin, as members of the family of God. So say our social principles. So long as the church speaks of the rights of immigrants as indirectly referencing immigrants of color, the church becomes complicit and continues to perpetuate the us against them mentality. Only when all of us are willing to come to grips with the reality that, except for our Native American sisters and brothers, we are all immigrants and work together to dismantle the us against them mentality, othering will continue, violence will perpetuate, and racism will be enshrined in the moral fabric of our society. People of faith, you and I have the capacity to work together to create a different and better world together. A world that only has all of us, each with our own family immigrant story. So help us, God. Amen.
The place I have lived is not what it seems. The praises of man.